Oh, Kapel, make me your own. Everyone calls you the gracious one. This is the Bhajan Mujhe Apna Bana Lo Kapal on page 253. Oh, Sadhguru, do not look at my faults. I am filled with many faults. Oh, Sadhguru, cut my despair. I have borne much desperation and pain. Oh, Sadhguru, please consider. Everyone calls you the gracious one. The sinner mind is very strong. It makes me sin and take away my virtues. Day and night it remains involved in the intoxication of lust, anger, greed, attachment, and egoism. Oh, protector, shower grace. Everyone calls you the gracious one. Many great rishis and munis were swayed away in the stream of mind. O Sadhguru, except you, who will hold the hand of me, a small jiva? O my Sadhguru, the gracious one of the poor, everyone calls you the gracious one. He himself protects his disciples. From the lowly ones he makes them the highest. The Jiva is in your refuge, O Sadhguru. May his honor be protected. O Sawan's Kripal, everyone calls you the gracious one. O Kripal, make me your own. Everyone calls you the gracious one. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 253.
मुझे अपना बना लो कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते मुझे अपना बना लो कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते ना देखो मेरे अवगुण सतगुरु अवगुण मुझ में बहुत भरे काटो मेरे संकट सतगुरु संकट मैंने बहुत सहे ना देखो मेरे अवगुण सतगुरु अवगुण मुझ में बहुत भरे काटो मेरे संकट सतगुरु संकट मैंने बहुत सहे सतगुरु करो ख्याल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते मुझे अपना बना लो कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते मन पापी का जोर बड़ा है पाप कराए सद्गुण हरे काम क्रोध मद लोभ मोह में लिपटा दिने और रात रहे मन पापी का जोर बड़ा है पाप कराए सद्गुण हरे काम क्रोध मद लोभ मोह में लिपटा दिन और रात रहे दया करो रखवाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते मुझे अपना बना लो कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते बड़े बड़े ऋषि मुनि हुए जो वे भी मन की धार बहे मुझक छोटे जीव की सतगुरु तुम बिन बहिया कौन गहे बड़े बड़े ऋषि मुनि हुए जो वे भी मन की धार बहे मुझक छोटे जीव की सतगुरु तुम बिन बहिया कौन गहे मेरे सतगुरु दीन दयाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते मुझे अपना बना लो कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते अपने सेवक की आपे राखे नीचो ही फिर ऊंच करे आ जाय अब तेरी शरण में सतगुरु शरणागत की पैज रहे अपने सेवक की आपे राखे नीचो ही फिर ऊंच करे आ जाय अब तेरी शरण में सतगुरु शरणागत की पैज रहे सावन के कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते मुझे अपना बना लो कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते कृपाल दयाल तुझे सब कहते
ओ कृपाल मेक मी योर ओन Everyone calls you the gracious one. I'm going to read today from Master Kripal's masterpiece, in my opinion, The Crown of Life. And the first half of this book is a survey of various yogic systems which are still taught in India, and a discussion of and how far they go, they succeed in doing what they set out to do. Many satsangis find that first half of this book kind of difficult, and some are frustrated with it. I remember way, way back, a young guy, I recommended to him to read The Crown of Life, and he said, I don't know why. You told me to read a book on comparative yoga. And the fact is that it's, of course, a great deal more than that. And there were enormous number of insights and psychological observations throughout the first section, first half, which make it a very, very, very worthwhile reading. And I have read this book many, many times over my lifetime. If I were asked to name a favorite book out of all the books ever written, this would probably be the one that I would name. Also, of course, Master, in that first half, gives a wonderful explanation of the philosophy of Advaitism, or non-dualism, which he says is the true philosophy, and which is presupposed in all the yogic systems, including the Shabda Yoga. In the second half of the book, which is where I'm going to start reading today, is directly about the path. Chapter 5 is exactly just that, a description of the path, maybe the best ever written. And then the rest of the second half is a discussion of how the path manifests itself, or doesn't, in various teachings, religious traditions, etc., and includes with a wonderful wrapping up of the whole thing. Anyway, I'm going to start today with Chapter 5, Surat Shabad Yoga, the Yoga of the Celestial Sound Current. And in this section, he does recapitulate much of what he says in the first half. And it's many of the insights and so forth that he has developed in the first half. He does go over here in a much, much less detail. So this, too, is very helpful, I think. All right, Master says, in the foregoing sections of this study, we have seen how it has been taught since time immemorial by the Indian sages that behind the apparent self of which we are conscious in everyday existence, the self that shirks pain and seeks pleasure, that changes from moment to moment and is subject to the effect of time and space, there is the permanent self, the Atman. This Atman forms the basic reality, the final substance, the essence of essences, and it is in the light of its being that all else assumes meaning. Likewise, we have seen how the Indian mystics have analyzed the nature of the universe. Seen from the surface, our world appears to be a queer composition of contradictory elements. Faced with these contradictions, man is compelled to look for a creator who holds the opposing forces in balance and represents permanence behind the flux of existence. But as he penetrates deeper and still deeper, he discovers that the contradictions are only apparent, not real. That far from being opposed in nature, they are differentiated manifestations of the same power, and that they are not even manifestations properly so-called, but are illusions of the ignorant mind, which are dispelled in the light of realization, when one begins to know that the ocean is changeless, though it appears to change. These two insights are basic to Indian thought, and on closer examination will be seen to be not separate, but one. The recognition of the absolute nature of the inner self, the Atman, implies recognition of the true nature of existence of the Paramatman, the Brahman. While an understanding of the nature of Paramatman or Brahman implies an understanding of the Atman. If behind the changing, time-ridden self there be an eternal, changeless, and timeless One, and if behind the flux of mutability of the creation as we normally know it there be an absolute, immutable reality, then the two must be related and must in fact be identified. How can there be two absolutes? How can the Atman be distinct from the Brahman when all that is only a projection of Brahman? The moment we realize these truths about the nature of self and over-self, or the one truth about the nature of reality, the problem that inevitably poses itself is, why do we in everyday existence experience the world in terms of duality and plurality, feeling ourselves separate from each other and from life in general? And what may be the means for transcending this unnecessary constriction of ourselves and merging into the ocean of consciousness that is our essential state? The answer to this first part of this question has been that the spirit, in its downward descent, gets enveloped in fold upon fold of mental and material apparatus, which compel it to experience life in terms of their limitations, until, no longer conscious of its own inherent nature, the soul identifies itself within their realm of time and space, nam rup prapanch. The answer to the second part has been that the soul can bear witness to itself, provided it can divest itself of its limiting adjuncts. The many forms and variations of yoga that we have examined are no more than the various methods evolved for accomplishing this process of disentanglement or spiritual involution. The one recurring theme in the teachings of all great rishis and mystics has been that their insights are based not on inherited learning, philosophical speculation, or logical reasoning, but on first-hand inner experience, or anubhava, a word whose lucidity of expressiveness defies translation. They explain that seeming differences are not because of any contradiction inherent in what they say, but because men vary greatly in temperament, and what is possible for the man of a cultured and refined intelligence is impossible for the unsophisticated peasant, and vice versa. Various rivers may run through different plains, but they all reach the sea. Patanjali's Eightfold Path is the first major attempt to correlate the many available avenues into a single coherent system for spiritual reintegration. Later rishis and teachers derive much guidance from him, but their teachings implicitly embody the recognition that his system is too exacting and tends to deny spiritual attainment to the average man. Furthermore, it is so complex that for the majority of sadhaks, aspirants, it is likely to become a maze in which they lose their way and mistake the intermediate goals for the final destination. And so, while mantra yoga, laya yoga, hatha yoga, and especially raja yoga carry on Patanjali's tradition in modified forms, there emerge three other major forms that represent, in contrast to the Ashtanga Marg, the Eightfold Path, a great simplification and specialization. The Gnana Yogin, the Karma Yogin, or the Bhakta no longer needs to retire from the world or undergo exacting psychophysical disciplines. Each approaches the goal from a particular angle and reaches it by sheer purposeful concentration. The end of all yoga, as Shankara clarified, is absorption into the Brahman, therefore aim at samadhi, in which state such experience can be attained. But if Patanjali's system and its derivatives have certain serious drawbacks, it is a question whether the three other major forms are wholly without them. If for the Karma Yogin freedom lies through detachment and desirelessness, is it possible for him to be completely free? Does he not seek emancipation in following his path, and is not that itself a form of desire? Besides, is it psychologically possible for the human mind to detach itself completely from its normal field of experience without first anchoring itself in another and higher one? It is a universal characteristic of man that he seeks kinship with something other than himself. This is the law of his life and source of all his great achievements. The child is bound to his toys, and the adult to family and society. As in the case of a child, you may not without harm deprive him of his playthings until he has outgrown them psychologically. Likewise, to expect the sadhak to give up his social and family attachments without first outgrowing them by discovering something greater and larger is to cut at the root of life. It will not bring progress but regression, for the man who undertakes it as an enforced discipline only succeeds in repressing his natural desires. The result is not the enhancement of consciousness, but its numbing and atrophy, not detachment, but indifference. This, as Mr. T.S. Eliot has pointed out, differed completely from both attachment and detachment, resembling the others as death resembles life, being between two lives, unflowering between the live and the dead nettle. The discipline of Karma Yoga is a necessary one, but if it is to fulfill its end, it must be completed by another discipline of an esoteric kind, without which it tends to reduce itself to an ineffectual attempt to lift oneself up by one's shoestrings. As for the Gnana Yogin, Gnana may carry him very far indeed. It may take him beyond the gross physical plane into the spiritual ones. But can Gnana carry him beyond itself? Gnana, of course, is the Sanskrit form, J-N-A-N-A, of the word which in Hindi and Punjabi is pronounced Gyan. So Master uses the Sanskrit term throughout here, although in other places and other authors the term Gyan Yoga is often used. But he pronounced J-N-A-N-A as Gnana. I have heard him say that, and so that's how I pronounce it here. And if Gnana, which as we have seen, forms one of the koshas that encompass the Atman, albeit a very rarefied one, how can it then give the soul absolute freedom? Gnana is the help, and yet it may prove to be the hindrance. It has indubitably the power to rid the soul of all encumbrances grosser than itself, but having reached thus far, it tends to clog further progress. And since it is not of the true essence of the soul, the absolute, it cannot be wholly above the reach of kala or time. Mystics distinguish between the two realms of time, kala and mahakala. Thus, first of these extends over the physical world and the less gross regions immediately above it, whereas the second stretches to all the higher planes that are not of pure spirit. Hence, the gains that the Gnani achieves may be out of the reach of time as we normally conceive it, kala, but they are not wholly beyond the reach of greater time, mahakala. It need hardly be pointed out that what is true of Gnana Yoga is also true of those forms of yoga that depend upon the pranic energies. They too are not of the true nature of the Atman, and as such cannot lead it to a state of absolute purity beyond the realm of relativity. Besides its inability to ensure absolute freedom, Gnana Yoga is not a path accessible to the average man. It demands extraordinary intellectual powers and stamina, which few possess. It was to meet this difficulty, as well as that posed by Karma Yoga when practiced by itself, that Bhakti Yoga came into prominence. He who normally would not be able to detach himself from the world, nor had the mental powers to analyze the true self from the untrue, could, by the power of love, leap or bridge the gap and reach the goal. But how can man love that which has neither form nor shape? So the Bhakta anchors himself in the love of some Ishuddeva, some definite manifestation of God. But in overcoming this practical difficulty, he exposes himself to the same limitations as the Gnani. The chosen Ishuddeva, by its very nature, represents a limitation upon the nameless and formless absolute. And even if the Bhakta reaches the level of that manifestation, can that limited being take him beyond itself to that which has no limitation? The study of the lives of the prominent exponents of this system clarifies the point. Ramanuja, the well-known mystic of the Middle Ages, failed to apprehend the teachings of his predecessor, Shankara. He followed what in Indian philosophy is known as the school of Vashishtadvaita, that is, that the Atman can reach Ishvara, God as the manifested creator of the universe, and can get saturated with cosmic consciousness, but it can never become one with him. What to say, then, of reaching God as the unmanifested, nameless Brahman? The experience of Sri Ramakrishna in our own time once again brings out this limitation. He had always been a worshipper of the Divine Mother, and she often blessed him with her visions. But he always perceived her as something other than himself, as a power outside himself, and one for whose operation he could often become a medium, but in which he could not merge himself. When he subsequently met Todapuri, an Advaita sannyasin, he realized that he must get beyond this stage to one where there was no name or form, and where the self and the over-self became one. When he attempted to enter into such a state, he discovered that his earlier attainments became a hurdle in spite of all his efforts. He tells us, "I could not cross the realm of name and form and bring my mind to the unconditioned state. I had no difficulty in withdrawing my mind from all objects except one, and that this was the all-too-familiar form of the blissful mother, radiant and of the essence of pure consciousness, which appeared before me as a living reality and would not allow me to pass the realm of name and form. Again and again I tried to concentrate my mind upon the Advaita teachings, but every time the mother's form stood in my way. In despair I said to the Naked One, his master Todapuri, 'It is hopeless. I cannot raise my mind to the unconditioned state and come face to face with the Atman.' He grew excited and sharply said, 'What? You can't do it, but you have to.' He cast his eyes around for something, and finding a piece of glass, he took it up and, pressing its point between my eyebrows, said, 'Concentrate your mind on this point.' Then, with stern determination, I again sat to meditate, and as soon as the gracious form of the Divine Mother appeared before me, I used my discrimination as a sword and with it severed it into two. There remained no more obstruction to my mind, which at once soared beyond the relative plane, and I lost myself in samadhi." It is clear, therefore, Master says, that while the bhakta can go very far spiritually, can greatly enhance his consciousness, gain miraculous powers, and anchored in a higher love rise above the love of this world, it is nevertheless not possible for him to get beyond the plane of name and form, and therefore relativity. He may get lost in the contemplation of the Godhead with his amazing attributes, but he cannot experience the same in its nirguna and its anami, its unconditioned and nameless state. He can feel himself saturated with cosmic consciousness, but it comes to him as something outside himself as a gift of grace, and he is not able to lose himself in it and become one with the ocean of being. If he does seek to attain that state, his accomplishment as a bhakta, instead of helping him further, tends to hinder and obstruct him. The two things that emerge from an examination of the popular forms of yoga that were evolved after Patanjali are, first, that the soul can rise above physical consciousness, given means whereby it can focus its energies without recourse to the arduous control of pranas, and second, that full spiritual realization, or true samadhi, is not merely a matter of transcending the physical, though that is necessary as a first step, but is the end of a complex inner journey in which there are many intermediate stages, the attainment of which, under certain conditions, may be mistaken for the final goal and may thus debar further progress. The problem that arises before the true seeker in the face of such a situation is to discover a means other than that of pranas, gnana, or bhakti of Anishtadeva, as not only to enable the spirit currents to be released from their present physical bondage, but also to enable the soul to be drawn upward, unhindered, from one spiritual plane to another, until it transcends completely all the realms of relativity, of nam and rup, of kala and mahakala, and reaches its goal, at one-ment with the nameless and formless one. And that is the introductory section. In the next section, he goes into the is called The Sound Current, and he talks about the essential point of the path, which is, of course, that the sadhak or devotee does practice all of the three, karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, but they are centered around the sound current, which is nothing that is relative, but is only in itself absolute. And our bhakti, which is applied in our practical everyday understanding to the master, does not hinder us when we get up to the point where it might, because we know that the master, and we actually see for ourselves and experience that the master is not an individual entity, but is a manifestation of the sound current. And therefore, our bhakti is really centered on, focused on, oriented toward the absolute from the beginning. And master, of course, does not, you know, put down any of those other yogic forms, even hatha yoga. I was on my first trip to India. One of the things that happened, we were taken to a hatha yoga ashram, which is in Delhi. I was told that the master was the sponsor, the patron of the ashram. Not that he had had much to do with it, I don't think, but they had asked him to be its patron, and he had agreed. And we observed hatha yogis performing things that seemed very difficult. The neole karam, where their stomach is churned around voluntarily, stuff like that. And of course, it's pretty well known that in the summer of 1969, just before I arrived in India that year, a hatha yogi turned up at Savan Ashram, and Master called everyone in to watch him and learn from him, because he was able to eat metal and glass, and did so without any problems. And he ate ball bearings, he ate pieces of glass in front of everybody. Jonas Gerard was there and took pictures of him, which he showed me when I got there. All the satsangis were talking about it. It was just a few days before I was there. And by the way, he was a very unassuming-looking guy in a T-shirt. Someone asked him if he could eat Cuckoo's Jeep, which was parked there or near there. And he said he could, but it might take him a month or so. Anyway, Master gave a talk to them about this hatha yogi. And he said, look what he has been able to accomplish by putting his attention on that which he wanted to achieve. And he has achieved it. And this is the same for you. You would put your attention on the nam, the shabda, and go within and reach that which you are intending to do. And he was very appreciative of the hatha yoga. When he talks about those three systems, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, karma yoga, he's not putting them down. In fact, each of those systems plays a very important part in the practice of the path. It's just his only point about each of them, when taken by itself, is that it's incomplete. But when they are merged together, and the fact of the sound current is inserted into them, then we have the complete system that the masters teach. And that is something we can all be grateful for.
ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੀ ਬਾਣੀ ਇਸ ਕਿਸਮ ਦੀ ਲਿਖੀ ਹੈ, ਅਗਰ ਪਹਿਲੀ ਤੁਕ ਦਾ ਆਪਾਂ ਸਹੀ ਅਰਥ ਨਾ ਕਰੀਏ, ਨਾ ਸਮਝੀਏ, ਦੂਸਰੀ ਦਾ ਅਸੀਂ ਕਰ ਹੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਸਕਦੇ ਗੇ, ਤੁਰ ਹੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਸਕਦੇ ਗੇ। ਆਪ ਨੇ ਦੱਸਿਆ ਸੀਗਾ ਕਿ ਤ੍ਰਿਪਤੀ ਨਾਮ ਵਿੱਚ ਹੈ, ਸ਼ਾਂਤੀ ਨਾਮ ਵਿੱਚ ਹੈ, ਨਾਮ ਤੋਂ ਬਗੈਰ ਜਿਤਨੇ ਵੀ ਸਾਧ ਸਨ ਇਹ ਕਿਸੇ ਲੇਖੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਨਹੀਂ। ਹੁਣ ਸਵਾਲ ਪੈਦਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ, ਦਿਲ ਚ ਖਿਆਲ ਆਉਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਕਿਉਂ ਨਾ ਅਸੀਂ ਨਾਮ ਜਪ ਲਈਏ, ਜਦੋਂ ਨਾਮ ਚ ਹੀ ਸ਼ਾਂਤੀ ਹੈ। ਲੇਕਿਨ ਗੁਰੂ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਆਪਣਾ ਤਜਰਬਾ ਦੱਸਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਆਪਣੇ ਆਪ ਅਸੀਂ ਨਾਮ ਜਪ ਨਹੀਂ ਸਕਦੇ, ਸਾਨੂੰ ਨਾਮ ਦੇ ਫਾਇਦਿਆਂ ਦਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਪਤਾ ਗਾ, ਨਾਮ ਨੂੰ ਅਸੀਂ ਦੇਖਿਆ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਗਾ। ਆਪ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਕੋਈ ਐਸਾ ਗੁਰਮੁਖ ਸੱਜਣ ਮਿਲ ਜਾਵੇ ਜਿਹਨੇ ਉਸ ਨਾਮ ਦੇ ਫਾਇਦੇ ਹਾਸਲ ਕੀਤੇ ਹੋਣ, ਉਹ ਨਾਮ ਰੂਪ ਹੋ ਗਿਆ ਹੋਵੇ, ਉਹ ਹੀ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਦੱਸ ਸਕਦਾ ਹੈ ਨਾਮ ਦੇ ਫਾਇਦੇ, ਨਾਮ ਨਾਲ ਜੋੜ ਸਕਦਾ ਹੈ, ਔਰ ਉਹ ਨਾਮ ਜਪਣ ਦੀ ਯੁਗਤੀ ਵੀ ਦੱਸਦਾ ਹੈ, ਔਰ ਉਸ ਨੂੰ ਹਾਸਲ ਕਰਨ ਦੇ ਫਾਇਦੇ ਵੀ ਦੱਸਦਾ ਹੈ, ਬਲਕਿ ਉਹ ਸਾਡੀ ਮਦਦ ਵੀ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ।
The bani of the guru sahib or the writings of the masters is written in such a way that if we do not explain the first line of the writing correctly, if we do not understand the first line of the writing of the masters correctly, we cannot understand the following lines, we cannot get anything from the following lines. In the beginning, in the first line, he had said that we get the real contentment only by doing the meditation of Naam. Without the meditation of the Naam, our breaths which we take are useless. Curse is on the life which is lived without doing the meditation of Shabad Naam. So when we read all this, that the real contentment is only in the Naam, then a thought comes in our mind that when the real contentment is only in doing the meditation of Shabad Naam, then what is difficult in doing the meditation of Shabad Naam? But Guru Sahib is talking from his own experience. He says that we cannot know the value of doing the meditation of Shabad Naam by ourselves. We do not know that what is the benefit of doing the meditation of Shabad Naam, because we do not know that what Shabad Naam really is, and we do not have any idea that how we can do the meditation of Shabad Naam. So in the second line, he himself says that if with the grace of God Almighty, we meet some friend, some Gurumukh who has understood the value of the meditation of Shabad Naam, who has become the form of the Shabad Naam, and who has done the meditation of Shabad Naam, if he helps us, only then can we understand the value of the Shabad Naam, and only then can we start doing the meditation of Shabad Naam. Such a Gurumukh friend will not only tell us the benefit of the meditation of Shabad Naam, but he will also help us, he will make us do the meditation of Shabad Naam, which will bring us the real peace and contentment.
ਗੁਰਮੁਖ ਉਹ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਜਿਹਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਗੁਰੂ ਬੋਲਦਾ ਹੈ, ਸਿਰਫ ਉਸਦਾ ਮੂੰਹ ਹੀ ਹਿਲਦਾ ਨਜ਼ਰ ਆਉਂਦਾ ਹੈ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਗੁਰੂ ਹੀ ਅੰਦਰੋਂ ਬੈਠ ਕੇ ਬੋਲਦਾ ਹੈ, ਔਰ ਉਹ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਦੱਸਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਨਾਮ ਜ਼ਿੰਦਗੀ ਦਾ ਉਹ ਪਾਣੀ ਹੈ ਜਿਸ ਨੂੰ ਪੀ ਕੇ ਸਾਡੇ ਮਨ ਅੰਦਰ ਤ੍ਰਿਪਤੀ ਸ਼ਾਂਤੀ ਆ ਜਾਂਦੀ ਹੈ, ਇੰਦਰੀਆਂ ਹਿਰਨ ਦੀ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਪਟਕਣੋਂ ਹਟ ਜਾਂਦੀਆਂ ਹਨ, ਔਰ ਨਾਮ ਉਹ ਰੋਟੀ ਹੈ ਜਿਸ ਨੂੰ ਖਾ ਕੇ ਸਾਡੀ ਆਤਮਾ ਤ੍ਰਿਪਤ ਹੋ ਜਾਂਦੀ ਹੈ, ਭੁੱਖਾਂ ਖਤਮ ਹੋ ਜਾਂਦੀਆਂ ਹਨ।
ਗੁਰਮੁਖ ਇਜ਼ ਦ ਵਨ ਥਰੂ ਹਿਮ ਦ ਮਾਸਟਰ ਸਪੀਕਸ, ਓਨਲੀ ਦ ਮਾਊਥ ਆਫ ਦ ਗੁਰਮੁਖ ਸੀਮ ਟੂ ਬੀ ਟਾਕਿੰਗ, ਬਟ ਇਨ ਫੈਕਟ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਦ ਮਾਸਟਰ ਹਿਮਸੈਲਫ ਹੂ ਇਜ਼ ਟਾਕਿੰਗ ਥਰੂ ਦ ਗੁਰਮੁਖ, ਐਂਡ ਗੁਰਮੁਖ ਟੈਲ ਅਸ ਦੈਟ ਨਾਮ ਇਜ਼ ਸੱਚ ਅ ਵਾਟਰ ਡਰਿੰਕਿੰਗ ਵਿਚ ਵੀ ਗੈਟ ਦ ਰੀਅਲ ਕੰਟੈਂਟਮੈਂਟ, ਅਵਰ ਥਰਸਟ ਇਜ਼ ਰਿਮੂਵਡ, and our organs of senses which were wandering here and there like the wild deer, they stop wandering here and there. Naam is such a food by eating which we remove all our hunger from ages and ages which we have, and we get the real contentment.
ਸੰਤਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਸਾਡੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਦੀ ਜ਼ਰੂਰਤ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਗੀ, ਉਹ ਤਾਂ ਆਪ ਆਪਣੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਵਿੱਚ ਮਸਤ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਹੈ। ਸ਼ੀਸ਼ੇ ਨੂੰ ਜ਼ਰੂਰਤ ਨਹੀਂ ਕਿ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਕੋਈ ਦੇਖੇ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਸ਼ੀਸ਼ਾ ਦੇਖਣ ਦੀ ਜ਼ਰੂਰਤ ਪੈਂਦੀ ਹੈ। ਜਿੰਨਾ ਅਸੀਂ ਪਿਆਰ ਭਰੇ ਖਿਆਲਾਂ ਨਾਲ ਗੁਰੂ ਨੂੰ ਦੇਖਾਂਗੇ, ਉਤਨਾ ਹੀ ਸਾਡੀਆਂ ਕਿਰਨਾਂ ਪਿਆਰ ਭਰੀਆਂ ਉਹਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਟਕਰਾ ਕੇ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਪਿਆਰ ਮਹਿਸੂਸ ਹੋਏਗਾ। ਅਗਰ ਅਸੀਂ ਉਦਾਸ ਦਿਲ ਰੱਖ ਕੇ ਜਾਂ ਪਰਮ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਗੁਰੂ ਨੂੰ ਦੇਖਦੇ ਹਾਂ, ਆਪ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਸਾਡੀਆਂ ਹੀ ਉਹ ਉਦਾਸ ਭਰੀਆਂ ਪਰਮ ਭਰੀਆਂ ਜਿਹੜੀਆਂ ਕਿਰਨਾਂ ਹਨ ਉਹਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਟਕਰਾ ਕੇ ਉਸੇ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਦਾ ਹੀ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਉਸ ਰੂਪ ਨਜ਼ਰ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਆਉਂਦਾ ਹੈ। ਇਸ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਸਿੱਖ ਨੂੰ ਬੜੀ ਜ਼ਰੂਰਤ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਹੈ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਪਿਆਰ ਕਰਨ ਦੀ, ਮੁਹੱਬਤ ਕਰਨ ਦੀ।
ਸੇਂਟਸ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਨੀਡ ਅਵਰ ਲਵ, because they are already intoxicated in their love with their master. They do not need our love. But unless we love the master, we cannot get our things done. It is like the mirror does not need that someone should look at it. If we want to see our reflection, if we want to see our image, we have to go and stand in front of the mirror, and whatever face we make, we will see that with our eyes. In the same way, if we look at the master with love, with faith and confidence in him, our rays, our feelings will come back to us after reflecting, and we will feel the same love from the master. But if we are looking at the master with our doubts, if we are depressed, and if we do not look at the master with all our love, then our feelings, our rays will reflect, and we will feel the same thing. So that is why it is very important for the disciple to grow in the love for the master. It is very important for him to develop love for the master if he wants to receive the love and the feelings of love from him.
Guru Amar Dev nu budde vare guru milya si na milya si ga unna ne us di qadr kiti hun aap apne guru nu ki kende hai kehne lage main ode utto qurban jana hai balihar jana hai kyunki mere andar unne naam da prakash kar ditta naam di jyoti juga ditti hai.
Guru Amar Dev ji Maharaj had met master in his old age. He appreciated his master very much. He adored him very much. So here, what does he say? He says that I sacrifice myself for my master because he has lit up the light of Naam within me. He has made my life and he has given me the contentment. So I sacrifice myself on him.
ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਹੇ ਮੇਰੇ ਪਿਆਰੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੇਵ ਹੁਣ ਮੇਰਾ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਜੀਵਨ ਹੈ ਉਹ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਯਾਦ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਤਾਂ ਜਿਉਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਭੁੱਲ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਤਾਂ ਮੁਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਆਪ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਕਿ ਜਦ ਮੈਂ ਵਿਆਸ ਤੇ ਬੈਠਦਾ ਹੈ ਉਦੋਂ ਹੀ ਜੀਵਨ ਨੂੰ ਤਾਜ਼ਗੀ ਮਿਲਦੀ ਹੈ ਜਦ ਨਹੀਂ ਬੈਠਦਾ ਗਾ ਜਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਅਮਲੀ ਦੇ ਹੱਡ ਅਮਲ ਖਾਧੇ ਤੋਂ ਬਗੈਰ ਟੁੱਟਦੇ ਹੈ ਤੋੜ ਲੱਗਦੀ ਹੈ ਉਦਾਸੀ ਆਉਂਦੀ ਹੈ ਇਹੀ ਹਾਲਤ ਮੇਰੀ ਹੈ.
Now he lovingly says, oh my dearly beloved master, my life has become such that whenever I remember you, only then I feel as if I am alive. When I do not remember you, I feel that I am dead. It is like the addict when he gets his intoxicant to which he is addicted, he feels that he is in his body, he is alive. When he does not get his intoxicant, he feels that his whole body is paining and breaking. In the same way, the dear ones, those who do the meditation, they feel that they are alive only when they do the meditation. When they do not meditate, they feel that they are dead.
Guru Nanak ne keha hai, amli jiye amal khaye, teon har jan jeeva naam te aaye.
Guru Nanak Dev ji has said that as the addict lives only on the intoxicants, in the same way, the beloveds of God live on the remembrance of God.
Sufi Sant Farid ji de do sevak san, ek kamai karda si, andar janda si, dusra updesh leke kamai ni karda si ga, andar janda ni si, usnu jehda abhyas na kare, ki abhyas di qadar ho sakdi hai, ki usnu guru di qadar ho sakdi hai, oh, ਜਦ ਇਕੱਠੇ ਹੋਏ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਅਭਿਆਸ ਨਹੀਂ ਕਰਦਾ ਸੀਗਾ ਉਹ ਤਾਂ ਗੱਲਾਂ ਬਾਤਾਂ ਬਾਹਰਲੀਆਂ ਹੀ ਮਾਰੇ ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ ਦੇਖ ਵੀ ਪਿਆਰਿਆ ਸਚਿਆਈ ਤੇ ਇਹ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਮੈਂ ਅੰਦਰ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਅੱਜ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਆਪਦੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੇਵ ਦੇ ਦਰਸ਼ਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਕੀਤੇ ਮੇਰਾ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਸਰੀਰ ਹੈ ਉਹ ਟੁੱਟ ਟੁੱਟ ਕੇ ਪੈ ਰਿਹਾ ਹੈ ਮੈਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਲੋਕਾਂ ਤੋਂ ਪੁੱਛਦਾ ਸਵਾਲ ਕਰਕੇ ਕਿ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਜ਼ਿੰਦਗੀ ਦੀ ਰਾਤ ਕਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਬਤੀਤ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਹੈ ਜਿਹੜੇ ਕਦੇ ਵੀ ਅੰਦਰ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਸ਼ਬਦ ਨਾਮ ਨਾਲ ਜੁੜੇ ਨੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਨੂੰ ਪ੍ਰਗਟ ਨਹੀਂ ਕਰਦੇ ਗੇ.
ਸੂਫੀ ਸੇਂਟ ਫਰੀਦ ਜੀ ਹੈਡ ਟੂ ਡਿਸਾਈਪਲਸ. ਵਨ ਵਾਸ ਅ ਰੀਅਲ ਮੈਡੀਟੇਟਰ, ਹੀ ਯੂਜ਼ ਟੂ ਗੋ ਇਨ ਦ ਵਿਦਿਨ. ਦੀ ਅਦਰ ਪਰਸਨ ਵਾਸ ਨਾਟ ਡੂਇੰਗ ਦ ਮੈਡੀਟੇਸ਼ਨ ਐਂਡ ਹੀ ਵੁੱਡ ਓਨਲੀ ਟਾਕ ਅਬਾਊਟ ਦੀ ਆਊਟਰ ਥਿੰਗਸ. ਵਾਂਸ ਵੈਨ ਬੋਥ ਆਫ ਦੈਮ ਮੈਟ, ਦ ਪਰਸਨ ਹੂ ਵਾਸ ਨਾਟ ਡੂਇੰਗ ਦ ਮੈਡੀਟੇਸ਼ਨ, ਬਿਕੋਜ਼ ਦੋਜ਼ ਹੂ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਮੈਡੀਟੇਟ how can they know the value of the meditation? How can they appreciate the meditation? So that person who was not doing the meditation, he started talking about the outer things, but the other person who was the meditator, he did not find any interest in that. And then he said that, I can tell you only one thing, that today I did not meditate, I did not go in the within, and I have not seen my beloved master in my within. And I feel that my whole body is breaking, and I'm feeling the pain all over. I want to ask this question to those who have never gone in the within and who have never seen the master in their within, that how they are able to live their life, how they are able to sleep without having the darshan of their master.
ਇਸ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਆਪ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਸਾਡਾ ਜੀਵਨ ਹੀ ਨਾਮ ਤੇ ਆਉਣਾ ਹੈ, ਸਾਡਾ ਜੀਵਨ ਹੀ ਨਾਮ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਜੁੜਨਾ ਹੈ.
So that is why here he says that my life is only by doing the meditation of Naam, my life is only connecting myself to Naam.
Mere Pritama O Jeeva
ਤੋਂ ਬਗੈਰ ਜੀਵਨ ਕਿਸੇ ਲੇਖੇ ਚ ਨਹੀਂ, ਕਿਸੇ ਕੰਮ ਨਹੀਂ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਨਾਮ ਗੁਰੂ ਹੀ ਜਪਾਉਂਦਾ ਹੈ, ਉਹ ਆਪਦੀ ਦਇਆ ਕਰਕੇ ਹੀ ਜਪਾਉਂਦਾ ਹੈ. ਹੁਣ ਅਸੀਂ ਦੇਖਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਕਿ ਸਤਸੰਗ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਦਿਨ ਰਾਤ ਕਰ ਰਹੇ ਹੈ, ਸਮਝਾ ਰਹੇ ਹੈ. ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦਾ ਭਾਵ ਸਤਸੰਗ ਕਰਨ ਦਾ ਇਹੀ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਕਿਵੇਂ ਨਾ ਕਿਵੇਂ ਇਹ ਨਾਮ ਨੂੰ ਜਪਣ, ਨਾਮ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਜੁੜ ਜਾਣ.
Now he says that without the meditation of the Naam, such a life which is without the meditation of Naam is useless, it is not counted anywhere. And that is why masters always inspire us to do the meditation of Naam. In fact, master himself graciously makes us do the meditation of Naam. All the times, day and night, masters are going on doing the satsangs. The only purpose of that doing satsang constantly is that some way or another, we may start doing the meditation and we may come to the path and do the meditation of Naam.
ਮੈਂ ਆਪਣੇ ਮੁਤਲਕ ਦੱਸਦਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹਾਂ ਕਿ ਅੱਜ ਤੋਂ 40-50 ਸਾਲ ਪਹਿਲਾਂ ਹਿੰਦੁਸਤਾਨ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਐਸਾ ਸਮਾਂ ਸੀ ਕਿ ਲੋਕ ਜਲ ਧਾਰੇ ਕਰਨੇ, ਧੂਣੀਆਂ ਤਪਾਉਣੀਆਂ, ਤੀਰਥਾਂ ਉੱਪਰ ਜਾਣਾ, ਮੰਦਰਾਂ 'ਚ ਸ਼ਿਵਾਲਿਆਂ ਵਿੱਚ ਜਾਣਾ ਹੀ ਮੁਕਤੀ ਦਾ ਸਾਧਨ ਸਮਝਦੇ ਸਨ.
ਰਿਗਾਰਡਿੰਗ ਮਾਈਸੈਲਫ ਆਈ ਹੈਵ ਸੈਡ ਦਿਸ ਅਰਲੀਅਰ ਆਲਸੋ ਦੈਟ ਅਬਾਊਟ 40 ਔਰ 50 ਇਅਰਸ ਅਗੋ ਇਨ ਇੰਡੀਆ, people used to believe that by doing the water practices, by visiting the temples and by going to the places of pilgrimages, one can do the devotion of Lord, and that is the only way of achieving the emancipation.
Jal tara is tarah karde hai ke ek kade pani to leke 100 kade tak ek kada roz vadhai jana hai. Jad 100 kada pura ho janda hai phir oh hat jande hai. Subah 3 baje ਜਲ ਧਾਰਾ ਕਰਨ ਵਾਲਾ ਉੱਠਦਾ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਕੁਛ ਪ੍ਰੇਮੀ ਉਹਦੇ ਸਿਰ ਉੱਪਰ ਇੱਕ ਕੜੇ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਸੁਰਾਖ ਕਰ ਲੈਂਦੇ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਪਤਲੀ ਧਾਰ ਉਹਦੇ ਸਿਰ ਵਿੱਚ ਪੈਂਦੀ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਉਹ ਪਿਆਰ ਨਾਲ ਉਹਦੇ ਥੱਲੇ ਬੈਠ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ, ਰੋਜ਼ ਇੱਕ ਕੜਾ ਪਾਣੀ ਦਾ ਵਧਾਉਂਦੇ ਰਹਿੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਜਿਹਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਇਹ ਮੁਕਤੀ ਦਾ ਸਾਧਨ ਕੀਤਾ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਮੈਂ ਇਹ ਕਰਮ ਬੜੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਨਾਲ ਭਰੋਸੇ ਨਾਲ ਕੀਤਾ ਸੀ ਲੇਕਿਨ ਇਸ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਮਨ ਨੂੰ ਸ਼ਾਂਤੀ ਨਹੀਂ, ਲੋਕ ਹੋਰ ਪੂਜਣ ਲੱਗ ਜਾਂਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਬੜਾ ਅੱਛਾ ਹੈ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ, ਇਸਨੇ ਜਲ ਤਾਰਾ ਕੀਤਾ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਇਸੇ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਇਹ ਦਸੰਬਰ ਦਾ ਮਹੀਨਾ ਜਨਵਰੀ ਦਾ ਆਮ ਤੌਰ ਤੇ ਸਾਡੇ ਇਲਾਕੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਠੰਡਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ, ਸ਼ਰਦ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ, ਇਹ ਇਸ ਵਿੱਚ ਕੀਤਾ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਧੂਣੀਆਂ ਹਨ ਇਹ ਆਮ ਤੌਰ ਦੇ ਉੱਤੇ ਸਾਡੇ ਮਈ ਔਰ ਜੂਨ ਦੇ ਮਹੀਨੇ ਸਖਤ ਗਰਮੀ ਦੇ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਹਨ, ਉਹ ਇਹਨਾਂ ਮਹੀਨਿਆਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਕੀਤਾ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ.
ਜਲ ਧਾਰਾ ਔਰ ਦਾ ਵਾਟਰ ਪ੍ਰੈਕਟਿਸ ਇਜ਼ ਡਨ ਲਾਈਕ ਦਿਸ, ਦਾ ਪਰਸਨ ਹੂ ਡਸ ਦੈਟ ਹੀ ਗੈਟਸ ਅਪ ਅਰਲੀ ਇਨ ਦਾ ਮਾਰਨਿੰਗ ਐਟ 3 o'clock ਐਂਡ ਦੇ ਸਟਾਰਟ ਵਿਦ ਵਨ ਪਿਚਰ ਆਫ ਵਾਟਰ, ਦੇ ਮੇਕ ਅ ਸਮਾਲ ਹੋਲ ਇਨ ਦੈਟ ਪਿਚਰ ਐਂਡ ਦੇ ਲੈਟ ਦਾ ਵਾਟਰ ਫਾਲ ਔਨ ਦੇਅਰ ਹੈਡ. ਦੇ ਸਟਾਰਟ ਵਿਦ ਵਨ ਪਿਚਰ ਐਂਡ ਦੈਨ ਐਵਰੀ ਡੇ ਦੇ ਗੋ ਔਨ ਐਡਿੰਗ ਮੋਰ ਪਿਚਰਸ ਐਂਡ ਦੇ ਗੋ ਅਪ ਟੂ allowing water of 100 pitchers fall on their head. This practice is usually done in the month of December or January, which is very cold time in our area. I have myself done that practice for achieving liberation, but I have not got anything from that. People start praising you, they start worshipping you, that you are a great Mahatma and like that. But in fact, you do not get anything from that practice. The austerities are performed in the month when it is very hot outside, in the month of June. And I have talked about this many times earlier, that how that practice is done. I myself have done both these practices, but I have not got any liberation from them.
Mere dil andar jo mathan de sanchalak san mandiran de ya masjidan de ya chhwalyan de unhan nu rab de wazir samajhda si ga ke jehdi utthe murti sthapna hai oh rab hai eh ohdi pooja karn wale ohde wazir han jad main jal dhara karke rampure phool gaya ਉੱਥੇ ਸ਼ਿਵਾਲੇ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਜੋ ਸ਼ਿਵਾਲੇ ਦਾ ਪੁਜਾਰੀ ਸੀਗਾ ਉਸ ਨੂੰ ਮੱਥਾ ਟੇਕਿਆ, ਪਿਆਰ ਕੀਤਾ। ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ, ਤੂੰ ਕਿਵੇਂ ਆਇਆ ਹੈ? ਮੈਂ ਕਿਹਾ, ਮੈਂ ਰੱਬ ਦੀ ਤਲਾਸ਼ ਵਿੱਚ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਥੋੜ੍ਹੀ ਬਹੁਤੀ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਝਲਕ ਦੇਵੋਗੇ, ਕਿ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਰਸਤਾ ਦੱਸੋਗੇ, ਮੇਰੇ 'ਤੇ ਰਹਿਮਤ ਕਰੋਗੇ। ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਬੜੀ ਜਲਦੀ ਹੀ ਜਵਾਬ ਦਿੱਤਾ, ਐਸੇ ਲੱਗਿਆ ਜਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਸੋਚਿਆ ਹੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਗਾ। ਮੈਨੂੰ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ, ਦੇਖ ਬਈ, ਇਹ ਸ਼ਿਵਦਿਆਲਾ ਹੈ, ਇੱਥੇ ਇਹ ਜੇ ਸਵਾਲਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਗੁਜਾਇਸ਼ ਨਹੀਂ। ਮੈਂ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਉੱਠਿਆ ਆ, ਹੁਣ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਦੇਖ ਲਓ। ਦੁਨੀਆਂ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਇਹ ਕਿਹਾ ਹੋਵੇ ਕਿ ਇਹ ਜੇ ਰੱਬ ਦਾ ਮੰਦਰ ਹੈ, ਇੱਥੇ ਆ ਕੇ ਰੱਬ ਨੂੰ ਯਾਦ ਕਰੋ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਜੇ ਸੱਚਾ ਸੁੱਚਾ ਕੋਈ ਤੜਫ ਵਾਲੀ ਆਤਮਾ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਸਵਾਲ ਕਰ ਲਵੇ, ਉਸ ਨੂੰ ਇਹ ਕਹਿ ਦੇਣਾ ਕਿ ਇਹ ਰੱਬ ਦਾ ਘਰ ਹੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਗਾ, ਇਹ ਸ਼ਿਵਦਵਾਲਾ ਹੈ, ਐਸੇ ਸਵਾਲ ਨੂੰ ਕਿੱਥੇ ਗੁਜਾਇਸ਼ ਹੈ।
I used to understand that the caretakers or the priests of the temples, mosques and all the holy places are the ministers of God. And since they establish the idols of gods there and they worship God, they might be very close to God and they might be the ministers of God. Once after performing this water practices, I went to a place in Punjab. The name of that place was Rampura Phool. I went to one temple and over there, since I was looking for God and I was very much interested in doing the devotion of Lord, I went there and I asked the priest who was taking care of that temple. When I went there, he asked me that why I had come there. I said that I am looking for God. Can you show me a glimpse of Him? Can you give me some guidance? He did not take even 1 second to reply. Maybe he did not think about the question I had asked him. He at once said that this is the temple. This is not the home of God. There is no room for such questions here. You can very well imagine that if those people, they worship God, for the other people saying that this is the temple of God, but if any sincere seeker goes there asking for the guidance and if he is told that there is no room for such questions in this place, this is not the home of God, this is just the temple of God, you can very well imagine that what that true seeker would be.
That talk was given on July 6, 1987 in Bangalore, India. Closing bhajan is on page 247. Naam ki mahima aparampar. The glory of Naam is infinite. I sacrificed myself on the Satguru. In a very short time, the difficulties and afflictions flee from one within, whose temple of mind the Satguru always resides. There is no bigger support than Naam. Kabir and Nanak meditated upon Naam. They illuminated the world. Reciting the Naam of the Lord, Mira drank the cup of poison. Adorn your life with Naam every day with regularity. Whoever remained indifferent to God has wasted his birth. The life of him who meditated upon Naam became successful. Whoever boarded the ship of Naam has crossed over. Naam and those who meditate upon it know the glory of Naam. Ajay, after getting attached to the feet of Kripal, has sung his glory millions of times. Whoever came to the door of the Master, his boat has crossed over. The glory of Naam is infinite. I sacrifice myself on the Satguru. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 247.
नाम की महिमा अपरंपार जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार नाम की महिमा अपरंपार जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार, पलक झपकते कट जाते हैं उसके कष्ट कलेश। जिसके मन मंदिर में रहते सतगुरु जी हमेश, पलक झपकते कट जाते हैं उसके कष्ट कलेश। जिसके मन मंदिर में रहते सतगुरु जी हमेश, और नाम से बड़ा नहीं है कोई भी आधार, नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार। नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार। नाम जपा कबीर नानक ने जग में किया उजाला, लेकर प्रभु का नाम पी गई मीरा जहर प्याला। नाम जपा कबीर नानक ने जग में किया उजाला, लेकर प्रभु का नाम पी गई मीरा जहर प्याला। नित नियम से करो नाम से जीवन का श्रृंगार, नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार। नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार। प्रभु से बेमुख रहा जो कोई उसने जन्म गवाया, उसका जीवन सफल हो गया जिसने नाम से आया। प्रभु से बेमुख रहा जो कोई उसने जन्म गवाया, उसका जीवन सफल हो गया जिसने नाम से आया। जो भी चढ़ा नाम की नया उतर गया भव पार, नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार। नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार। नाम की महिमा नाम ही जाने जा जिस नाम ते आया, अजायब कृपाल के चरणी लग के कोट कोट यश गाया। नाम की महिमा नाम ही जाने जा जिस नाम ते आया, अजायब कृपाल के चरणी लग के कोट कोट यश गाया। जो भी द्वारे आया गुर के उसका बेड़ा पार, नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार। नाम की महिमा अपरंपार, जावा सतगुरु के बलिहार।
The glory of Naam is infinite. I sacrifice myself on the Satguru. May God bless us all.